Welcome to Sport Faith Life with Brian Bolt and Chad Carlson, two guys who came together with one common purpose, to think deeply about sport and faith. They are sports scholars, they're coaches, and they're competitive athletes, or at least they were. And together, they've created Sport Faith Life, a conversation that meets at the intersection of sport and faith.
Today on Sport Faith Life, we welcome John Welty Peachy. What a great name. As a professor of sport management at public universities, John studied sport as an opportunity for development and for social justice. Then, after a very productive scholarly career, he took the Dean for Academic Affairs role at Gordon College, a Christian university, where he continues his work in leveraging sport for the good of all and connecting it to his faith. John has a wealth of wisdom to share, so let's get started.
Well, so excited to have John Welty Peachy with us here today. John, tell us a little bit about sport in your life.
Brian, thank you for the opportunity to join you. I look forward to talking with you and to the dialogue. As I think back, you know, sport, athletics has been a part of my growing up, my life, boy, since I was a little boy running around out on the soccer pitch and playing backyard football and all that, although my mother never permitted me to play football because it was too violent. So there's one sport I wanted to play in high school, but I was never permitted to do that because it was perceived as too violent for her. So I let that one go. But, you know, from a very young age, I've been heavily involved, and I always tracked more towards the endurance individual sports. So my background would be in track and field, cross country, marathon, cycling, ultra distance events. So I got started in that, you know, fairly early. My father was a big cyclist, and I think I remember riding bike probably with him since I was like four years old. So he sort of got me started in that. I played volleyball, men's volleyball, dabbled in soccer, but wasn't that good. Always perceived myself to be too short for basketball, so didn't do that. But I could jump, so I'd play volleyball, and that was fine. But football, always wanted to play, but my mom said, yeah, no way. I'm not going to be doing that. And we didn't have ice hockey where I was growing up. I grew up in Pittsburgh, Western Pennsylvania, which one would think would be ice hockey, but it was very much a football-oriented Western Pennsylvania, steel mills, blue-collar area. So football was king, you know, during that time in the 70s, 80s when I was growing up. But I never kind of tracked that way. I sort of pursued more of the individual sports and then kind of carried that through, you know, for myself through high school, through college, through after college in terms of competing, cycling, running, all of that. So still like to consider myself an athlete, as we all do, like not quite washed up yet, but you know, I still run quite a bit and long distances and all, but I'm out running and thinking that I'm going quickly. And then, you know, all the guys in the cross country team just like dash by me, you know, and I say, well, just wait 30 years, you know, and you'll be where I am, right? Mm-hmm. It's still, you know, a good passion of mine to stay active and to compete when I can, but more so in the individual sports is really my background.
It seems like, John, you know, Brian and I, neither of us are endurance athletes, but it does seem like there's something about the reflective life of academia that is conducive to endurance sports. So we appreciate you saying that. tell us a little bit about faith in your life.
Sure. Yeah. And we'll talk about this a lot more as we go forward. I think for me, there's a strong intersection of faith and sport, which is where I really hooked my career in what I do. But I grew up and still am Mennonite. So for those listeners and those that are familiar with Mennonites from the Anabaptist tradition. So, and I grew up in Pennsylvania, in Western Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania has many, many Mennonites there. A little known fact would be that my grandfather was Amish, actually, and left the Amish church during what's called the room school years or the running around years. So when he was a teen and running around, you know, and had to decide whether or not he was going to join the Amish church, he opted not to do that, and then came to the Mennonite church at that point. And so I have relatives who are Amish who I do not know to this day, because at least in that bishop's district in Pennsylvania, the practice of shunning is still very much in play. So I have that background on in that end. But grew up in a Mennonite home, Mennonite community in Western Pennsylvania. My father and mother were very, very heavily involved in church work. My father was in leadership in the Mennonite church for many, many years, edited our national church publications. So he was a journalist, editor. So I got to travel around with him and be, always felt like I was in the know, because I do all these like special meetings of Mennonite Church USA and all these important gatherings as a kid. I kind of go along with him. And felt like I knew things that were going on at the national level, which was kind of cool. So it was always kind of, you know, steeped in that from a very early age. That culture was part of me, which led me to, in my undergraduate work, was at Goshen College, same state as Calvin. Calvin is Indiana, right? Michigan. Close by, Indiana, sorry. And Hope is in Michigan as well, right?
Yep.
All right. So I went to Goshen College, which is in northern Indiana, a small private faith-based institution affiliated with the Mennonite Church, which continued to, you know, shape me. I think that experience as an undergrad and going to a Mennonite school was very foundational for me and encouraged me to, in terms of my faith journey, but also thinking about more, what do I want to do? You know, what do we want to do when we grow up? You know, I always pose that to my students. You know, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I'm not sure we ever grow up, but, you know, we continue to think, well, what do we want to do? And I think that was very foundational for me, you know, because I had a love for athletics, a love for sport, but also really a passion for my faith, and in particular for social justice. And so I was always, you know, really, I think, looking for ways that I could bring the two together. And so I think that's what's, you know, shaped my career as an academic. And when I was in practice, working in international sport development for a number of years, I think my faith really has shaped and continues to shape my practice in sport, my academia, my scholarship, my work, my leadership now in administration. And then coming now to Gordon College after a career in public land grants, that's been it feels like coming home in many ways for me, you know, kind of circling back to my roots, you know, coming back to where I began in higher education as an undergrad, coming back to that landscape of a faith-based institution, which feels really, really good when I think about the work I want to do in administration and such. So I think my faith is really infused, you know, throughout my life, my background. It's kind of really influenced the direction I want to go. But I've always looked at how can we bring together, I think some of the point of your podcast is how can we bring together, you know, kind of our love for sport and, you know, our faith, and how do those work together in synergies or conflicts that we might have as well. So I love exploring those questions and look forward to talking with you more today.
Well, you've already given us a lot to sort of jump off from. I appreciate that background. As it's already kind of intriguing to think, okay, the Amish background and this idea that you were in endurance sports as well. Chad, I do take offense. I mean, golf takes 5 hours to play. That's endurance.
I'll give it to you.
I don't know what you're saying there. And my mother let me play football. She didn't love me quite as much. And so you avoided head injury. Good for you. Before we get to any of that, I just wonder, is there one thing that you would want to tell your listeners to help tell our listeners to help us get to know you a little bit?
Sure. Yes. And it's an anecdote that I use with my students in my classes, which is I always have them guess the longest run I've ever done. And nobody can ever guess it. So I could ask that to the listeners, but we wouldn't have immediate feedback here. So
we'll take a shot. Yeah, okay. Chad, you can go first. What do you got?
26.2 miles is my guess.
Way low.
I'm gonna go with you're like an extreme endurance person. I'm going to say 75 miles.
Way low.
Ooh.
So John, you don't look crazy enough to have gone farther than that.
Well, so this was in my younger days when I was stupid and crazy, as we say. But I'll preface this by saying, I mentioned, you know, I've always been interested in looking at ways to bring together my faith and interest in sport, and also interest in social justice. So that's always been a passion of mine, which has infused my research and my scholarship. But back when I was in college and 22, and, you know, feel like you can conquer and do anything, a buddy and I, who are both ultramarathoners and runners, but also very interested in social justice, particularly issues revolving around homelessness and the plight of the homeless in the United States. And we got to thinking one night late, probably really late, what could we do? Is there anything that we could do to potentially use running to bring together our interest in that with our interest in social justice and thinking about, you know, making a difference in the lives of homeless people? So as a result of that conversation, we got this wild and crazy idea, because it hadn't been done to that time very often, is what if we did a run from the West Coast to the East Coast of the United States and use that as a vehicle to speak in communities and churches and high schools and youth centers and media and such, to really use that as a point to leverage for calling attention to the plight of the homeless. So we did it. And so my longest run was 4,000 miles. That's why I said both 26.2 and 75 were a little low. Was not nonstop. This, you know, of course, this was 5 months with a number of injuries and all kinds of crazy things happening. That's a whole other podcast, you know, all the stories with that. But what we were able to do is, I think, use sport as a vehicle, right, for social change, which is, I think, what my scholarship, what my teaching, what my work is about, is how can we use those passions to make a difference? And that was informed by my faith, informed by my interest in social justice. So after 5 months, we made that trek of 4,000 miles and ended in Boston, not too far from here, you know, from Gordon College at Boston Harbor. I wouldn't advocate that anybody does that necessarily. I was 22 and stupid, but. And this was before Forrest Gump, so I always joke that Forrest Gump kind of got the idea from us.
Sure.
You're the original.
But I think that's maybe something unique that, you know, has been foundational for me, that has informed my life, but kind of at a young age really stimulated me as I moved on in my career and working in sport and then in academia. I've always been looking for ways to do that and for using sport as a vehicle, right, as a way to address issues of social justice, or using sport as a way to work as social change. So that was kind of my first fledgling effort at doing that back when I was 22, 22 and stupid, I guess.
Well, hopefully you've continued being stupid as you go forward, you know, and done a lot of interesting projects. You've mentioned a lot of things already. You've mentioned your interest in justice. You've mentioned your own research, faith and sport. And I guess I want to start there without having you kind of chronicle the work you've done. Can I go back a step and just say, why do you think people play sports or participate in sport? And why should they?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think we are always trying to answer that, of what is the value of sport in society and why are we drawn to it? You know, aside from the obvious of health benefits and ways that we stay active, I think it's in many ways, and what some of the research is showing and what we've looked at, is it is a form of community as well. And there's something about that camaraderie, or that experience together of working towards, in a physical sense, common goals, working together towards something like that, with others, trusting others, building relationships, that is impactful and powerful. And we think about, you know, why can sport potentially be used as a positive vehicle, let's say. We know there's many, many examples of sport not being positive, the negative sides of sports. but the potential of sport that we're drawn to, I think is some of that. It's fun. You know, we like it. You know, it's one of those things that's fun. It gives energy to us. You know, it's social. It's universal. You know, as we know, every culture, country has some derivation of sport, playing games in some way. And it looks different depending on the culture. We speak, you know, that common language. You know, when you travel, you can go and if you see people out playing soccer on the pitch, you can go join, and there's some of that commonality. So it helps to build some of that connection. So I think there's a lot of that in there, you know, that it's part of who we are as humanity, you know, who we are as people that God has given to us. Also given us music and the arts and many other very important parts of being human, you know, and celebrating God. And sport being one of those pieces that we have that, when done well, can be very celebratory and uplifting and almost a sense of worship, I think, is what I like to see of it as, if we do it well. Right? So I think that sport has that role of it can do a lot of those things, but it can also not do. It can do the exact opposite of all those things as well. So that would be my take on it, Brad, where I'd come out.
So that's a really interesting answer. And I think, John, one of the reasons why Brian's asking that is because we study sport as play. And one of the things you said is sport can bring us together because it's fun. It's just fun, right? That's part of the reason why we participate, that it needs no other justification. And the work that you've done throughout your career, both in practice and then in your research and teaching, has to do with sport for good, having sort of an external end or goal to it. Can you speak to the ways in which, you know, we take this entity that people participate in for no other reason than it's intrinsically valuable, and to be able to use that for good, social justice, mm-hmm. community-based good?
Sure. Yes. How much time do you have? I think there's a lot of layers to that. There's really a lot of layers to that. I'll start by saying I was just covering this in class the other day because I do teach a little bit. You know, when I always say that sport as a concept, sport is inherently neutral, and it has its positive and negative connotations to it from the values that we bring to it. As leaders, as coaches, as managers, as the athletes, we bring values to it that give it meaning. So just the act of sport is relatively a neutral thing. So it matters how we do it. And I think that's the message that I've come to after, 20 years of research and scholarship now in this space and working in it is... we have to be careful about assuming that sport will automatically evince positive outcomes. That if we, let's say, are interested in, we'll use homelessness for an example, since I've mentioned that. If we're interested in, let's say, using sport or soccer, let's say, to improve the lives of individuals suffering from homelessness, one can't just put the soccer ball out on the pitch and say, go play, and gather a lot of individuals who are homeless together and put them out there and say, go play soccer and improve your lives. That's not going to do much. There needs to be a lot of scaffolding, a lot of ways that we think about, and we can get into this a little later maybe, how we do that, how we activate sport, how we plan it, how we change it, what's the level of competition that we need or don't need, depending on the population we're trying to serve. Who are the coaches? Who are the instructors? What's their training? So it's not just a magic pill. You know, sport can solve all these issues, or sport can bring communities together and heal divides, you know, through conflict resolution. Maybe it can, and there's examples where it does, and it can, but it can also do the opposite of that, too. So I think the main message that I would convey, and we can get into this a little, is it manages how we do it and how we design it, particularly when you're thinking about sport as a tool, sport as an intervention, sport as a way to, say, activate social change or help marginalized individuals or communities. It's much more than just doing a sport program. There's a lot more layers to that that one must consider to do it well. So that's a lot about what I've become interested in, is the management of and the design and planning and leadership of these types of programs. And how can we best do that? You know, how can we best lead? How can we best design programs that have as an outcome something more than just winning and losing, you know, that we tend to see in the media? Very different than our professional sport model, or, you know, D1 college model, or, you know, what we tend to see and value sometimes in society. So we have a very different approach to what the potential of sport can be. So that's what intrigues me. And I think that's a lot of where I've focused in my scholarship and my teaching, and trying to help students to realize, too, that there's more to sport than just what we see on TV. There's more to sport than just the pro game or the big-time college game, that there's so much more there that I think even aligns with our faith-based approach to education. You know, as we think about, say, sport and peace or sport and social justice, I mean, that would seem to align a lot, you know, with what we do here at Gordon, with other faith-based institutions. So that's the concept that really intrigues me, that I'd like to continue to explore, you know, as I journey forward in my career.
Yeah, that's it's very intriguing. It's interesting to me that you've described sport as neutral, and also acknowledged, I think, that sport can sometimes lead to negative outcomes, negative consequences. If we go all the way back, sport sometimes has a violent element to it. I'm wondering if you're interested in homelessness and people on the margins and some, you know, social justice good that you're attempting, why sport as opposed to something else? I mean, why not music? Music isn't violent. Well, I suppose it could be. Why not something else? Why sport?
Mm-hmm. And that's an excellent question, and one that my colleagues and I just did a research project on, that a conceptual mapping project that's going to be coming out in one of our sport management journals soon, which was actually asking that exact question. And so we did a concept mapping exercise with leading academicians and practitioners in sport for development and social change, asking that exact question. You know, why sport? You know, what are there some dimensions we can hone in on that might suggest that sport, maybe you're not saying that it's any better than, say, music or theater or very other really good programs, but it can complement those. So we have to be careful in saying, I think, one of the things we realized through this project is we have to be careful in saying that sport's the best way or the only way. It's a way. And it can be a good way for some people some of the time. And so sport's going to be very good for some individuals. And sport's not going to be a tool that we would choose for other individuals. You know, music might be better, right? Or some other type of cultural arts, or gardening, or some other activity might be a better fit. But for some people, some of the time, sport can be a good way to help with change. And so then you get to the question of why. So a couple of things that are intriguing, and I might have alluded to some of this in sort of the opening questions that we were talking about early on in the podcast. One is that it's universal, and so it's a universal language, and it's understood in every culture. It manifests differently, of course, but we all like to play. You know, we all like to recreate. It's a form of leisure. We connect over that. So you have that universal appeal of sport that seems to speak to us all, no matter where we're from. there's something about, and this was interesting, talking about what might be different about sport than, say, music or another arts-based program, is something about the physicality, something about being physical with others, not necessarily violent physical or tackling or that, but that kinesthetic movement, that moving in harmony with others or needing to pass a ball to somebody else, and having that physicalness there is a property that some other activities don't have. And we have to learn through that to trust. If we're going to pass a ball, we have to learn that somebody's going to be there. And there's something about building relationships through that physicality. So there's that physicalness that's there, which helps with, you know, things as trust building. So we're striving for these common goals and we're competing. And we might be competing with or against people, let's say, if we're in programs that are working at conflict resolution through sport. And let's say we're bringing together, in this day and age, because I know there's programs that have done this, let's say we're bringing together Israeli and Palestinian youth. And we're going to use soccer or football as the means to try to help with bridging some of these cultural misunderstandings or helping youth understand each other better. Of course, in those situations, in terms of design, we don't want to design a program where we have the Palestinian youth versus the Israeli youth playing soccer. So we can't do that. So we need to mix them up and have mixed teams, which engenders a lot of ways you have to manage and coach that and have trained mediators and such. But there's something about, in that sense, on a soccer pitch, let's say you're playing with people that you grew up distrusting, but you have to pass the ball to them, right? And trust that they're going to be there to get that pass from you. And then they're going to pass it back to you and you're going to pass it to somebody else. So you're working together in a physical sense towards a common goal. And there's something about that experience that can say, oh, yeah, like I can trust you. You know, I can trust you. You're going to be there. You know, we're striving towards the same goal. You know, maybe we're not so different. There's something about that physicalness and that trust that must happen in order to achieve those common goals that can engender sport as a, you know, some type of vehicle, right, for these positive elements to happen. So those are some of the things that I think have come out of that particular study. Of looking at that, I think the question was, why sport? You know, some of those, I think, interesting dimensions that play into that.
I love hearing that. I think, you know, Brian and I experienced that firsthand not long ago, being in another country, training some youth sport coaches. And we were hired to train, to lecture. And we did some lecturing. But, you know, that didn't go a long ways towards developing relationships. But, you know, after a couple hours of lecturing, we get out and can play for a few minutes with the coaches and can participate in games. And you just learn so much quicker, right, about people. You read each other, you're able to divulge certain things through your play that really, that takes a lot longer to articulate, especially when we're talking about different cultures being together. So appreciate how you articulated that. And just want to say, Brian, I certainly resonate with that. And I'm curious, in the midst of what you said, where's Christianity in all of this? Where can Christianity be? Where should it be? And are there places where it shouldn't be?
Yeah, and that's a really good question. One I've really thought about over my years. And, you know, as I think I mentioned, you know, I've been in spaces prior to coming to Gordon that have been more secular in terms of my academia work. And indeed in my practice in international sport development have been with more secular organizations. And so I've always thought about that, is where does faith come in, right? Where is that dimension? And for me, I think when I think about sport for development, sport for social change, sport for development and peace, sport and peace, faith is inherent in that for me. I mean, that's the space that we as Christian academicians, scholars, sport practitioners, athletes, athletic directors, coaches, can be in. And to me, that activates my faith because I'm, in my view, doing what I think Jesus is calling us to do, welcoming others, you know, working for change, bringing the marginalized together, helping them in some way to, better their lives, right? To be included. And so I think I've seen over the years, at least my passion being in sport and development, is that my faith is a huge part of that, or can be a part of that, as we think of sport's role in social change. And even change within sport. So we would be remiss to not state that we have many things that are wrong with sport, not just in America, but in many areas. And we could talk about that at length. But part of social change with sport, too, is within the sports system. And how do we work for change? And I think our faith is very important there, with how we lead, with how we design programs that are ethical and caring and inclusive. So I think our faith, I think we have a huge role as Christians in sport to do things in a way that really glorify God, and we can work for change within sport too. And I think that's really needed. You know, sport can be used for change in society, but you know, there's so many things that we know we need to address within sport itself as well. And I think that's a role that we can play, you know, those of us that are coming from faith traditions, you know, whatever they are, is that we have a role there too, you know, to do sport better, right? To treat people better, to design programs and policies and procedures that are going to be fair, equitable, and show our faith through how we run our program. So I guess I see it as two sides of the coin, you know, both being very important ways that we as Christians, right, that our faith can really inform us, you know, not just coaching, you know, not just coaching. You know, we see that at our faith-based institutions, right, that our coaches play an important role, but we as administrators as well. You know, how we design the programs, how we design the policies. Those are really, really important too for activating our faith. So those are, I think, some ways that I view that intersection that have been important to me over the years.
Yeah, John, thanks for, you know, kind of laying that backdrop for us and helping us step back and think about sport. I wonder if I could pull you right down to brass tacks here a little bit on your job change. So you've been at a land grant institution doing research on sport and recently decided to move, as you mentioned, to a faith-based institution. And I'm wondering if in both cases, you're sort of intersecting with college sport in one way or another. I wonder if you could change one thing about college sport, what would it be?
If I change one thing about college sport, I would say that we regain a focus on what college sport should really be about, which is the student athlete and the student, and really the development of that individual. Now, that plays out differently in many ways based on level of college sport. So Division I being immensely different than Gordon College, right, or Calvin or Hope, or a Division II institution, a Power Five big time school being even different than other Division I schools, NAIA, JUCO. So we have so many different levels in college sport, but I think sometimes, no matter what the level, that we lose, I think we lose sight on what is athletics really about and why do we have it? You know, what is its purpose? What are we doing with it? And I think that, again, as Christians, as those of us coming from a faith tradition, we might have a vastly different answer to that than others. But in terms of the one thing I would change in college sport, I think it would be whatever it looks like at the different levels, really what are we doing that's in the best interests of the students? You know, what's in the best interests of the student athletes beyond the winning and the losing and all of that? What are we really about, you know, in the NCAA or in the NAIA? And that's important to me. And, you know, now that I here at Gordon, I have had athletics come under my portfolio. I guess they figured because I was a professor of sport management, I could just oversee athletics. So I said, okay, all right. So that's been interesting and fun. So I've been doing that now. We just hired a new athletic director. So excited about that. But it's an opportunity, I think. We all can say, well, we can change so much in college sport. You know, we all probably talked ad nauseum about the many challenges, the many issues, and now we have NIL, and we have all pay for play and all kinds of different conversations and unionization of athletes and, Title IX and all kinds of things. So we know there's a lot that is there that can be unpacked, but I guess we'll come back to again, I think, to answer your question is what's our compass pointing towards in college sport? I think maybe we lose sight of that sometimes that, you know, really all of this should be about what's in the best interest of the students. You know, how are we contributing to their growth and development in whatever shape and form that may be. So I like to sort of start with that as, you know, sort of a visioning point. And to help us keep focused on, you know, on what we should be doing.
Well, I think that's a great place to start and a great reminder for all of us, John. Thanks so much for taking a little bit of time and talking with us here on Sport, Faith, Life. And we just wish you the best as you go forward.
Thank you very much. It's been a privilege. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to the Sport, Faith, Life podcast, a conversation at the intersection of sport and faith. Read the corresponding blog post and learn more about us at sportfaithlife.com. Listen to more of our podcasts on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Follow us on social media to stay up to date with everything sport, faith, life.